we have to have a quick, just, you know, in O'Doherty dive.
Creep of the week.
Gemma's up to her usual creep of the week antics, and was just absolutely bawling a guard out of it earlier today on the Keys.
Similar to the Vicar Road film, Soph.
I haven't seen the Vicar Road film.
It sounds like...
What's she doing out the Vicar Road? Where the hell does she live? What is her 2K?
Exercising her human rights to go wherever the fuck she wants.
I think she lives up there, lads. I think that...
Does she?
I think so. You can tell by her accent if you listen very closely.
Well, it's definitely more our neck of the woods. Mm. I hate to admit it. She's one of our own. Basically she was filming... the guard stopped her. Can you tell me the, very politely, can you tell me the purpose of the journey? Absolutely not. None of your business. So just so oppositional from the very first second. And then, so it all kind of deteriorated into like one guy just standing in front of the bonnet of the car. He's got her stopped on the keys and down, and just looks bored, just bored by this. And then Gemma's just like lambasting this other poor Garda through the driver's window, like refusing to give the Garda her name, then gives her her name, then blasts the guard for not knowing who she is, then just carries on. Just
she's a fucking
relentlessly
disgrace.
She's relentlessly ridiculous. Stupid is just what I was gonna say there.
She's really digging in. She's digging
the two
in.
Of them had their her and John Waters had their little orgy as well outside the forecourts, by the looks of it, where they've obviously drummed up the support of about 12 people. So they've packed them in good and tight to, give the illusion of a lot of people. So it's so insane. Like, how did this happen? I don't know why. Like, it's just mad. They both... Like, John Waters used to be a thing.
Yeah, like John Waters was at one time... quite respected.
Quite respected. Yeah.
For what?
He was a
columnist.
You know, he was grand, like. But this is madness. It's like Gemma looks at how everyone is feeling and what's accepted, and then takes a stance on the opposite side.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of it.
We all
just
know a Gemma. This is not a, yeah, this is just, you know, everyone has one of those people in their friendship groups. Everybody has a Gemma. No? Just me then?
I don't know if I have someone as intense as Gemma. I definitely have someone who, yeah, who takes a controversial stance.
I am your Gemma. I think you'll find.
Devil's advocate here. I think Gemma's problem is that she's underneath it all thinks that she's an investigative journalist. So she always has her iPhone camera out and she's accosting people as they do their day-to-day activities. Like, did you see the Dublin Airport video?
No.
Where she went around Dublin Airport and she was like, all of these flights come in. It's business as normal here, blah, blah, blah. And they had to, Dublin Airport put out this scathing tweet back to her, and they were like, it is not business as normal, Gemma. We usually have 150,000 people through today. We've had like 900 or something people come through on essential flights that have been deemed necessary by the government. We're obeying all the guidelines. Get off the premises.
Yeah. You are non-essential, Gemma. Please leave.
My understanding of the airport is, if you're not using the airport, I don't know if you're allowed to just wander around it, are you?
Right now?
Well, just in general.
Or just ever?
Ever. I guess you are, because people can go at the arrivals and be there. I retract that statement. It's
right. Yeah, you can. I used to do this story. I used to work for the Aer Lingus magazine, and part of that was going to the airport to photograph people as they...
And of course, the arrivals.
Arrivals. Mm. And
it's
find out when
they
were coming.
Feel-good feature.
It was gorgeous. Always on like page 3. Couple of little... Polaroid-esque photos and a few words from the people returning.
Sean Oak, back from Oz, and his mammy is up from Clonmel to give him a hug at Dublin Airport.
There'll be no more of that, lads. There'll be no more Australia for Sean
Oak.
No
hugs. I can't. I'm browsing my browser, so I can't see how you guys are getting on.
Can I?
Would you like to have a creep story?
Yeah, I'm excited for your one, Sos.
You've been holding on to a creep now for at least two recordings.
I think I've been brewing this creep quite some time.
It's time to release your creep.
It's time. All right. Did you have something you wanted to say beforehand, Cass?
No.
I don't know why I said that like that. I just thought you had started a sentence. Well, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot.
That's funny. Cassie,
Cassandra, are you here to apologize to the people?
Absolutely not. I can't remember all the things I've said, but I probably meant them.
I stand by them, whatever the hell they are.
That has offended anybody, ease up. No, that's actually dangerous, isn't it? Because some people are going to listen to this and think that I did say something offensive to somebody and need to apologize for something and then are therefore refusing.
I love how confident you are. Would you not just presume you've offended a few people?
I mean, I definitely have offended a few people, but I didn't do it with any intent. So I can't apologize.
You can't make that argument, though.
But you can't go around and apologize for it. Like, we're on the creep dive. The podcast is, by its very nature, a little bit offensive.
Fair.
So if I've
said, I don't know why I opened up this bloody Pandora's box of a debate.
Yeah, sorry, that's
terrifying. Reverse, lads. Don't let them start wondering when we offended them. So we teased this last week. I think I was saying how all the healthcare workers, were rightly being lauded at the moment, and we are so grateful.
Sorry.
To everyone who's working on the front lines and in the essential services. But, not everyone who is a doctor is a good man. Look at Leo and Harold Shipman. I'm sorry, I just flashed on Leo doing his doctoring earlier, wherever he was. Did you guys see that? I need to leap to it.
You need to go out for a long walk without your phone.
I need to get out there. anyway, no. So 20, can you believe it's 20 years since we first learned of the existence of one of the most boring men in England, Harold Shipman.
Hold on. That's been 20 years.
Yeah. And I fucking vividly remember this story. Do you?
Of course. Absolutely.
No, I do
Cassie,
not.
You don't?
No idea. Wish I was 2.5.
She was young.
You were right to describe him.
She was just a
boring
little fetus. But reading Tiny. Chat magazine, but Shipman wouldn't have been in Chat, probably.
If it's in any way highbrow or an actual crime that isn't to do with Satan possession and an affair and incest, it's probably not made it to Chat magazine. Although Chat magazine back in the day also wasn't as salacious, shall we say, as it is now. They found their niche and they developed into Love Death Prizes or LifeDeathPrizes.com, whatever it is.
I think they just are constantly trying to jump their own shark with every issue, you know? Mm-hmm. They just ever escalating kind of game of who can kind of who can better the latest crazed headline. Anyway, okay. So Harold Shipman was a serial killer, but he was quite an unusual kind of serial killer, as we'll see. And as I said last week, he's believed to be the most prolific, if that is the word, serial killer, not only in the UK, as I erroneously claimed last week, but also just the world. Like, yeah, apparently it's actually they've extended it now, and he's global. He's gone global with this thing. So they believe his victims are potentially greater than 250.
What?
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back. And also, so obviously now GPs, lovely people, I'm sure. And they're definitely doing great work at the moment. But do you ever notice the way a GP won't let you do two queries in the one visit?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I like to save them up to get my 65 euros worth.
Yeah. But like, I had a GP who always used to clock when I was going on to the second query. And she'd get quite shirty until definitely one day I wanted to be like, what, do you want me to just go out the door and walk back in and then like pay double when I'm leaving or what? Anyway.
Like all of these things could be symptoms. Like I've got a rash on my toe, I've got a lump on my head, and I've got a very sore throat. That's, they're three symptoms of something. Have you never watched House MD?
Yeah, that's the way you sell it to them, Cassie. That's a good point, Sus. Like you
Am I doing it wrong?
You're doing it wrong by taking a breath and beginning a new thing. You're saying...
Yeah.
You're so right. You're just rolling it all up into unconnected. One cigar for them to
Yeah,
smoke.
Exactly. You've got, I have these unusual symptoms that are definitely connected.
Exactly. Yeah. Sore throat and a hemorrhoid. So I'm thinking they are unconnected.
Chronic anxiety and the need for the pill.
I was about to say, like, how do you just throw in the old contraceptive needs, you know, without it being so definitely a secondary query? Unless your first query was related to, how horny you were, maybe.
Yeah.
Like
you
were just on this insane horn and you have a sore throat and also do you have any Yasmin?
Like the umbrella anxiety feelings, and then say, look, there's a natural, if you yourself, sex cures your anxiety.
Of course.
And your anxiety is could be the reason for all of these unconnected ailments.
So many people who suffer with anxiety are screaming at the phone right now being like, sex does not cure your anxiety.
I'm just saying, that's what you could be selling.
It's a good one to try.
Well, you
anyway.
Could be like, I'm deeply anxious at the thought of becoming pregnant any given moment. Give me the treatment for the anxiety and
a bit of contraception.
I can't stop clicking my fingers. If you're listening to this and you're like when I'm in agreement, I don't know why I'm doing that. I'm sorry. I'll switch to thumbs up.
I think we've all been de-socialized. When we all come back together, everyone's going to have these really weird and irritating habits. It's going to take a really long time.
I'm going to need to, for whoever I'm talking to have a mirror they hold up right beside their own face so that I can watch myself talk to them, because that's the only way I communicate with anyone.
The only way we'll be able to hold Jen's attention.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry, I'm distracted. My own eyes are just gorgeous.
Divine.
Thank you, Sophie.
Anyway, look, basically all I'm saying is that GPs, they're just always trying to do the barest minimum for us. All of this is obviously... a mob was going to come after me with pitchforks and I deserve it. We love you, GPs. You're great. Well done. But anyway, Harold Shipman was a GP who went to the other extreme and basically did far too much for his patients. So he grew up. I just think he's one of the most boring mans alive. Like if you look at him, you're just like, what? Yeah. Like most prolific serial killer in the world. Like there's nothing in him that says
sexy, exciting, dark and dangerous.
No, or even like, wow, totally outlandish scumbag either. Like it's just, he's just like meh. He's just got a meh face, kind of a meh sort of look to him. And
his name is the first clue.
Harold. Yeah. So anyway, very kind of textbook sort of English upbringing in Nottinghamshire, which is textbook English place name. Dad drove a lorry and his mum was a homemaker. They were devout Methodists and Harold played rugby. And like, I mean, there isn't a single standout fact there about his childhood.
Yeah, he looks so generic.
Just generic. That's the word. Generic.
Like if you were to give a child a piece of paper and a pen and said, draw an oldish man, that's what they draw.
Yeah. And you'd guess his name is John Smith or Harold Shipman. Definitely. Yeah. So anyway, he did lose his mom now when he was a bit young. Must have been hard for poor Harold. And my sympathy then completely cuts out now because he went on to become obviously world's most prolific serial killer. But he was quite close to his mom, and she died of lung cancer when he was 17. And actually her death was similar to what would later become Harold's method. So she was in the later stages of her disease. She had morphine administered at home by a doctor, and Harold witnessed his mother's pain subside. And then her death shortly thereafter.
I swear, this whole time, I'd have him Googled here in my phone, and I thought his name was Shitman. Shitman.
Shitman.
But it's not. It's Ship.
It's man. Ship, like a man of the sea. But I think Shitman is perfect. Let's go with Shitman, because defo, he's a shitman. So now, also on this, like, morphine is lovely. But it just doesn't scream like killing spree.
No.
Do you know? Like, it's just such a... everything I say about this is going to come off as creepy as fuck, but it's so anticlimactic. To be like, I'm going to murder someone and then just, you know?
I don't think so. I think it's getting to the actual core of, you know, you have like various different types of serial killers, and most of the time it's sex related. This is interesting because it's not overtly sexual, not that we know of. And it's the very moment that some serial killers talk, the Iceman, you know, the Iceman tapes, if you watch them, he talks about the moment that somebody dies, and he used to look at his victims in the eyes and really watch for them dying. And that was kind of the chasing the dragon moment part of it for him anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I suppose it's just like, if I was going to go there, I feel like I'd be in for a penny, in for a pound, and I'd like...
Bloodbath.
I'd be like, maybe he get a chainsaw and, oh, why don't we see what this does? Or, do you know?
Like, yeah, but then you'd get like one good murder and you'd be out, like, because you're going to leave so much of yourself on the scene if you're like fucking wrangling a chainsaw around the place. But Shipman, he did it slowly and quietly. And what you're telling me, he killed hundreds of people.
Yes, hundreds.
Sounds like he did a good job.
Potentially hundreds. Look, I just think that he went for quantity over quality is all I'm saying.
Yeah, but maybe that was his kick, his fetish.
I think he probably did come in his pants when he administered people's death injections, which is what he went on to do. But first, before he did that, he got married and had four kids. And he had this like just insanely normal seeming life. So he married Primrose May Oxtoby in the 60s when he was 20, and they had four kids, and he studied medicine, obviously, set up his own GP practice in the 80s. It's just the most terminally boring kind of
average,
just very mundane.
Yeah.
Do we have any sense of a moment? Did he ever, sorry, this is way down the line. You'd keep talking stuff.
Well, I was just, it made me think of, like, I had a GP once years ago who had loads and loads and loads of his family photos all up around his GP office. Because, you know, the way GP offices can be kind of homey. And sometimes they'd be in, like, the basement or the garage of somebody's house.
Yeah.
And I was always obsessed with all these family photos because they were just, like, too perfect and too normal looking. Like, nobody was ugly in the family. Everyone was just attractive enough. They'd loads of family holidays, just having like nice times on the beach. Okay, I might be just
projecting.
I mean, I might be projecting. Yeah. Also, maybe just showing up slightly, like, not that my family, like, they're not ugly, and we have nice times too. But like the family photos, they just didn't look that perfect. These people just looked healthy, too healthy, and.
Well, hold on. These were his. He was a doctor. He was like, look at my family. I'm keeping them alive,
keeping them well. That's true. But even just like, you know, they were kind of reasonably tanned. And they, do you know the way when you take Irish people to like a Euro camps in France, and we just look like a bowl of potatoes amidst all the very attractive French people. His family looked like they belonged in these places. I think that's what I'm trying to say. And I think I've gone off topic. But basically, this is what I started really picturing with Harold Shipman and Primrose. and they're four kids. I just was picturing this kind of level of normality that like is all, it's actually tipped way over into abnormal.
Gotcha.
But anyway, Harold was totally abnormal underneath all of this facade. He did have a bit of a brush with the law when he was younger, because he, despite seeming like a completely like upstanding member of the community, and I suppose if anyone ever seems like that, it's an obvious red flag. Like the super helpful, super, super nice people, like they're compensating for something, you know?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Overkill. Too much.
Yeah. Like what? Just relax, unless you're hiding something. Anyway, he was hiding something. So he had a kind of developed a drug problem during the course of his studies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And he did get in trouble with the law for forging prescriptions.
What was he taking?
That he would then use for himself. So he was forging patient prescriptions and then getting probably morphine and the like for himself. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, so he was an addict, but did this come out after?
No, though that wasn't widely known in the community.
Gotcha.
But his family and stuff knew it. But also, like, he got over that, got through it. And anyway, that was the bloody least of his problems, because he was already, by that point, killing patients. So
wow.
What age
was he?
So he was, like, in his 30s, they believe, when he kind of started. So they think that he started in the early 70s. And finished in the late 90s, 1998. So 27 years of killing an estimated 250 people.
What?
Yes. So how it all kind of came out was that a funeral home raised concerns to the coroner of like the district where they were living in Manchester. So the funeral home had just noticed that they were getting a lot of work from Dr. Shipman, and there was a high death rate among his patients. In particular, there was a lot of requests for cremations for elderly women that he would need countersigned by the funeral home.
So would that not have been a family's decision?
The cremation?
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, I know, but I think it's just a kind of, it's bit of bureaucracy that the guy, the GP who's called to kind of, I suppose he was taking care of them in their quote unquote last weeks,
yeah,
perhaps. All I know is anyway that the funeral home could see that his signature was on all these cremation forms.
That's a fucking mad position.
Do you know, so the family was probably bringing the form in, and he was going, God, it's that doctor again. Oh, it's Shipman again.
Oh, that is fascinating, isn't it? Because how, well, I guess, like, let's say you're a funeral home. Where were they? Were they in the big city?
Because the funeral home is the only kind of centralized thing that all of these people will be funneled through.
Well, that's it. You're going to a local GP and you're using the local funeral home.
Totally. But
that is interesting. So how?
But say even like a GP's patients wouldn't necessarily know other patients of their GP.
No,
the way. So it's only the funeral home that could have really noticed this.
So tell us again, at what stage did the funeral home?
In 1998.
And how long had Shipman been practicing in that area?
In that specific area in Manchester? I don't know.
I wonder how many, basically, what was the count that tipped it over into suspicious stuff? From the funeral home's perspective.
Low. Sorry, I did read an interview with the coroner that the funeral home had contacted. And I think it was I think it was like around 10 or 20.
How interesting.
Like
and
low
do you think
compared with his overall number.
I wonder as well whether funeral homes, would they ever have met Harold? Like, do you think there was any kind of suggestion that they were suspicious of him having met him?
But you wouldn't.
That wasn't suggested
so
anywhere that I was
dull.
Reading.
So dull.
Like if you met him, there is no way you'd be like, murderer.
No, you're right. That would probably lean in his favor.
No.
Yeah.
Plus, you wouldn't be like, you wouldn't be like murderer either, I think, initially. I think you might be like, oh, like GP medical, with
what, misconduct or whatever.
Misconduct, or is he becoming compromised himself? Is he developing dementia? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that when they started to sniff around, it was like the death rate was that of unusual, but like, I don't think you'd immediately take it to serial murderer, would you? I mean, you might possibly be like, there's something up with this
malpractice,
that, or maybe he is not fit anymore to work as a doctor. Maybe he's sick. Do you know that kind of way?
Of course. Something is awry.
Sniffing around. They alerted the authorities and the police were unable to find sufficient evidence to bring charges. Though later they did think that the police had kind of assigned inexperienced officers to the case. Again, probably because nobody wanted to fucking talk to that boor shipment. They were like, oh, send those lads. This guy is just generic, John. Anyway, they abandoned the arrest in April of 1998. And he managed to kill three more people before he was eventually arrested. So imagine three
people.
In
what space of time?
So he was arrested in September.
April, May, June, July.
Yeah, yeah.
Three more people. And his victims were specific.
Help himself. So they were, yeah. I mean, they think that he probably evaded detection because it was also random and weird and unlikely. Like, so there seemed to be no motive whatsoever for his murders. The victims, as you say, were largely older women, but described as mostly being in good health. Like,
oh, really? I didn't know that.
No sense of like, oh, like he was expediating, you know, a painful death of somebody in the late stages of a disease. No,
gotcha.
Like they were generally thought to be in good health. There was even a 41-year-old man, and much later it came out there was a suspected child.
Oh.
So how would he actually do it? Like you had...
Oh, actually
well, how was
do
he
it?
Killing? Yeah, I mean, like an ordinary person wouldn't necessarily need an injection of anything.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would die immediately having had the injection, the overdose of morphine. It's not a slow release death.
True. Except I suppose maybe he'd often be alone with the victims and...
That must have rang a few bells.
It wasn't ringing enough bells fast enough, though. I think we can agree. So his last victim was what obviously scuppered him. He made a fateful blunder that was to put an end to three decades of senseless murdering. So he got greedy and he got obvious.
It just always happens, obviously. They get slippy at the end.
Very, very sloppy. It was like an episode of Murder, She Wrote. It was so bad. Bad writing if somebody had written this. So his last victim was a woman called Kathleen Grundy, and she was found dead at her home, and he was the last person to see her alive. He signed her death certificate and recorded old age as the cause of death. And her daughter, was a lawyer. Her name was Angela Woodruff, and she became concerned when the family solicitor informed her that a will had been made, apparently by her mother, though there were doubts about its authenticity, and mm-hmm. the will effectively cut out Angela and all her siblings and totally randomly left £386,000 to shipment.
Bonkers.
And bonkers.
So obvious.
So obvious. And then, I keep losing my place. They went to the police and they had their mother's body exhumed and examined. And there was traces of diamorphine, which is essentially kind of heroin, used for pain control in terminal cancer patients sometimes. And Shipman claimed that she was an addict, and he showed them comments he had written to the effect that she was an addict in his records. But then on examination of his computer, they could date the comments and it showed that they were written after her death.
Oh, for God's sake.
So he'd gone in and tried to retrospectively add comments to her patient files. So he was arrested in September. And that's when they found that he owned the exact type of typewriter that the forged will had been made on. A very Murder, She Wrote type detail.
Very.
And the daughter's name is Angela. Well, Angela Lansbury. I know the character was Jessica, but like, you know. Anyway, then, right, the police were like, well, this is all very fucked up. And they randomly selected 15 specimen cases of shipments to investigate to see if this was a repeated behavior. And they found a pattern of him giving lethal doses of diamorphine, signing the patient's death certificates, and then falsifying falsifying medical records afterwards to indicate that they had been in poor health when they hadn't been. So he was just a fucking sick bastard who loved killing people and also really enjoyed paperwork.
Exactly. So hang on. So he wasn't there when some of them died? Or was he there when they all died?
No, I don't think he was necessarily there all every time.
So he was prescribing them pills?
No, he wasn't in administering the injections.
Okay.
Yes, he'd scarper. Like, I mean, in that the case of Kathleen Grundy, he was the last person to see her alive, yes. I don't think that was absolutely always the case, but...
Okay, so he visited her home.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so then, so there's two theories going for why he decided after 250 odd people to get into kind of the swindling side of murder, because he had never done that before. So he, one theory is that he wanted to be caught because he was like, oh my God, over 200 people have died, Harold, Jesus, this will never end. And so he kind of just did the most, like,
obvious thing,
ham-fisted job of covering his tracks ever.
An anticlimactic murderer.
Well, the other theory is that he just wanted to retire at 55 and leave the UK. And I can so picture him cropping up on
Homes Abroad.
I was about to say, you know, a year of months, or, you know, Homes,
yeah, whatever,
home
whatever that
sun.
Show
a place
is.
In the sun. A place in the sun. And you watching the episode with him and Primrose and being like, oh, real duds on this episode. You know? Like, you wouldn't even watch his episode of A Place in the Sun. He's just that bad.
So, okay.
So in the end, they charged him with the murders of Marie West, Irene Turner, Lizzie Adams, Jean Lilly, Ivy Lomas, Muriel Grimshaw, Mary Quinn, Kathleen Wagstaff, Bianca Promfitt, Nora Nuttall, Pamela Hillier, Maureen Ward, Winifred Mellor, Joan Melia, and Kathleen Grundy.
How many was that?
So that is, should have counted, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. And they all died by the same method of lethal injection, all between 95 and 1998. So 15 kills in just like 3 years there. And that's just
absolutely
his last 3 years. So he got 15 life sentences for that. But
he was finished.
What
was the reaction from his family and his, I'm sure he had a couple of mates, just one or two.
A couple of mates. Oh my God. Imagine all the other GPs just like,
yeah, what? Harold.
Christ, Harold.
Harold. The same Harold we went to whatever with. Yeah. I'd say it was absolutely.
Oh,
imagine
my God.
Imagine you were his wife.
I'd say they fucking ate it up because, I mean, we're all sick fucks. We all would eat it up if someone we knew, it turned out, had killed 250 people. Anyway.
Yeah, but you'd be so shit that, like, nobody even remembers him now. I've never, like.
I can't believe you'd never heard of him.
Because
he's still alive.
What is there to remember? Oh, but don't you think it's kind of the boringness is almost the fascination? Anyway,
absolutely.
Listen, I'll just tell you the last bit because it does concern Primrose. So he always maintained his innocence, and he disputed every bit of scientific evidence they brought against him, and he never ever made any public statement. Just absolutely closed mouthed about it. And Primrose, poor Primrose, like, stood by him steadfastly, even after the police uncovered £10,000 worth of jewellery in the garage.
From his victims. Yes. Holy fucking shit.
Yes.
So he was slipping off
a
ring.
So he actually took trophies and stuff. So Shipman died in prison. He actually died like 4 years after he was imprisoned, and he died by suicide. And he reportedly told his probation officer that he was considering suicide to assure his wife's financial security after he was stripped of his NHS pension, which he was actually still going to get.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So Primrose Shipman received a full NHS pension, which she wouldn't have got had Shipman lived past 60.
How interesting.
She didn't kill anyone for a minute.
I know, but like, Primrose didn't kill a single person.
Yeah, but like he was, yeah, but the pension only passed to her because he wasn't getting it because he was dead. He would have got it if he had lived to 60.
Oh, God. Good shade. Well, I mean, that was a single act of
generosity.
But that's a very flawed pension system now.
I'm like reading it and going like, surely not. But I think that is it.
I'd say it's fairly rare all the same.
It's just definitely that I'd say the old NHS pensions office is just really under it in terms of paperwork. Again, they needed Shipman to be doing their paperwork. Yeah. They probably
like
tried to go digital or something recently, and they're like, there's some poor fuck just working through them all. And like, even he's like, Harold Shipman, yeah, that seems nothing off there anyway.
Yeah.
Just put it in the accept pile. Anyway, so after he died, right, do you remember all the jewellery?
Yeah.
Primrose asked for it back.
Excuse me?
I mean, Jesus, Primrose, why?
The victim's jewellery?
Yeah. And police had written to the families of the victims asking them to identify the jewellery. And one piece was returned to a murdered patient's family after they were able to provide a photograph as proof of ownership.
Oh, God.
Otherwise, authorities returned 66 pieces to Primrose.
What the fuck is that about?
And they auctioned off another 33 pieces that she confirmed were not hers. So
what do you mean who auctioned that off? The police did?
Yeah. They put the proceeds of that into a victim support charity.
But like, she's like, I don't want those. You can keep those bits.
Yeah, she's like, oh no, not. I don't recognize those. Primrose, listen to yourself. They were found in your garage. Your husband's been hoarding them. I think
as
it's time
trophies.
To accept that he was guilty.
That is the kind of the most fucked up part of the story.
Isn't it?
In her mind, do you think she had convinced herself that Harold had been hoarding them for her? And that they had nothing to do with any victims. It was just that he was visiting antique shops and these were gifts he would have leaked out to her over the years.
I mean,
maybe.
I'd say like that suggests that they might have been boxed up and perhaps in bags. I'd say this was just a freaky drawer full of dead women's jewelry.
Wasn't knickers.
Oh. So that is the story of Harold Shipman.
Harold Shipman.
I'm sorry, I do
what
feel like there is nothing redeeming about it.
That's fine. He's just so fucking hateable.
He's hateable. Yeah,
there's nothing likable about that man. He's not even his creative ways.
I know.
Everything.
Actually, if you were to write it, done this to us.
You'd have to create some sort of film. It'd be so boring. Like The Mundane Murderers by Harold Shipman.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that must be why he's so overlooked, because he's so fucking, even in death and even his crimes, just also withholding. Like, fuck you, Harold. You didn't even give us anything to work with here.
I know. So boring.
Boring.
That's why he's been forgotten.
But 250 fucking people. Like,
I know. It's a lot of fucking people. But can you imagine, like, having that second name? Those kids don't need to change their second name because no one fucking remembers what their dad did. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's a good thing.
One of them.
Imagine the poor kids being like, no, mom, come on. Now, think about it. Like, where did this jewelry come from? Why do some of the families have photographs of their loved ones wearing the jewelry?
Oh, it's a coincidence.
But also just imagine the, like, I don't know, Harold, it's Tuesday, you know, he's going to treat about 7 people who are in with a cold. Like, that's, let's face it. Write a few prescriptions for Yasmin and then, you know, oh, I'll just kill Mrs. Grundy on the way home as well, I suppose.
Exactly.
Like, oh, maybe it was. In fact, was it just to spice up the life of a
I wonder, was there regional GP? Them all?
Was there anything that connected them?
Yeah, was there any like weird small, like were they rude? Were they late? Was there something that same GP triggered him? Or was it just that he picked people entirely at random? Was there any bit of interest to this?
We'll never know, Cassie.
We'll never know.
Because
also
everyone's
just how mad to go to bed. Like how, like murder must have become like so normalized for him.
Totally.
You know that kind of way. Like how mad to go to bed of a Wednesday and be like, I killed someone today.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something I've done 250 times.
Yeah.
That would be the equivalent.
A podcast?
Podcast?
Podcast, yeah. So, episodes of The Creeped.
Yeah. So, that was marvellous. Thank you, Sophie. Cassie, do you have something this week?
I have something I can get into.
Please give us, because I just feel like, what have I done there?
I have a death-related. What length of you are you looking at, Cass?
Maybe like 10, 15 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah, give it to us.
So I have been, you know, chime in here. This is an interesting discussion. I have been researching a story for Rogue about people who become addicted to online worlds, virtual realities and the likes, because of the idea that the way you feel when you're living in an augmented reality or a virtual reality is relative to how people feel in the real world. Like if you find
their
happiness in there, you can find happiness, you can find love, and if that fulfills you in that way, then what's the harm?
Yeah,
but sometimes those virtual reality feelings have real world consequences. And I started researching for the Creep Dive then crimes that have originated in a virtual space and have transpired into the real world.
This is just so fun. That's a really fun topic. Because I think it's like when you have an avatar you're involved in. Remember, what was the first big one? Half-Life? This Life?
Second Life.
Something?
Second Life.
I remember the hysteria about Second Life. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I was on it.
But like,
were you?
All the pundits were like, this is going to destroy humans.
Totally. People
destroy
were
humanity.
And it's destroyed some humans. I guess you have said it was sort of the beginning of a totally like a game with no, was The Sims probably going around the same time, with no real purpose. It was just you wandering around land, like forming actual relationships with, you know, real
That's
people.
That's it. It's
true.
Real
characters.
Yeah, it is real. Like they're real friendships. I mean, the bond you feel is going to be akin to that you feel from a real friendship. I'm sure you're confiding in people in the same way. Actually, in a piece
Better.
I wrote before about catfishing, there's this theory of inhibition that happens online and that you bond with people faster
sure.
in the virtual world than in the real world because you can behave in different ways. You can behave without social norms.
Look at Love is Blind.
That's it. And
is that Love is Blind? Yeah, where they got married in 5 minutes?
Yeah, because they had an emotional connection.
Right, so anyway, first crime that has occurred in the virtual reality world and then with real world consequences was a game theft. So a Shanghai gamer, it's going to be tough now, but bear with. Qi Changwai killed player Zhu Kaiyun when he discovered he had sold a dragon saber that had been loaned.
What?
So Mr. Changwai, the murderer, had created this powerful virtual weapon for playing it in a game. So
a not Legends, a real thing.
So it was a game called Legends of Myr. And this happened. So I watched a documentary a couple of years ago about people who set up businesses in Second Life, selling whatever little bits and bobs the other characters need in Second Life, and were making a fucking killing and had very low overheads. It's genius.
Sure, I'm Cassie, set up people were making trousers. I mean, I say making. I guess they were making them just from a coding.
But like coding them.
Yeah. You could buy a pair. Do you remember? You'd be in like a designer.
I was never
store.
On Second Life.
And then
I never got it.
Actual brands kind
came
of
in and
came in
it.
And, you know, you could go to a Gucci store. And it was fucking madness.
And you could potentially buy...
Yeah, but of course there were knockoff Gucci store next door, and there's nothing Gucci could have done about that.
Genius.
You know, because they actually weren't selling. I guess they could have done some. I don't know, but anyway, there was magic going on.
So Mr. Chiang Wei had this powerful virtual weapon, and he'd only just amassed it or created it or something, and he loaned it to this other player, Zhu Kaiun. And then Zhu put the thing on eBay where it sold for £460. Like, that's no small, that's not pocket change. Like, £460 is significant.
So I guess.
I just thought you were going to say this massive figure.
like the antique throw show.
For something that doesn't
when they
exist.
Throw, like,
it's free fucking money, yeah.
But like, it literally. It's a thought that's illustrated, and someone has bought that for £460 to use in a game called Legends of Myr, which is about players taking on roles of warriors, wizards, and priests.
Guys, a lot of things don't exist.
Priest
that
inclusion
we buy.
Is an unusual one.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. A lot of things don't exist that we buy. Like, podcasts technically don't exist as a thing, but like £460.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
For someone to just stumble upon and buy on eBay. So Mr. Kaiyun Zhu said that he would give the money to Mr. Chiang Wei, but he was so angered that he lost patience and he attacked him in real life. And he stabbed him with a real knife in the chest and killed him.
Jesus. So they lived in the same city. How did they find each other?
eBay.
Maybe they were real friends, but he came across, I guess, on eBay. He found it on eBay. Found the listing on eBay.
Yeah, maybe he was able to find out the guy's location from his eBay or something.
That is so funny.
Oh my God.
It's like
the China Daily newspaper reports that there's an increasing number of players in real life courts resolving disputes over stolen money and items that have occurred in this Legends of Myr game.
But of course, it's funny, isn't it? But people's whole, how many hours, like, there's this, remember that couple, maybe you're going to tell us about it, didn't they, one of them starve to death, or it was definitely, or did they starve their children? There was some really depressing, it was held up as this, a
I
reason
think it was
we all,
the second thing.
Yes, it was, it, and it was like this, it was through the media, everyone was like, look, I told you now, the computer games, evil.
I don't know that story.
Oh, anyway, you don't need to. Let's not go there into that story. That's too bleak.
No, I won't get into it. So anyway, then there's another world that I learned about.
Too
today.
Bleak. The death count on this episode is like 251 now.
That's
It's about to get a hell of a lot worse, right?
Oh, God.
So there's this also this kind of community, this online community in Japan, very prominent. And they are suicide pact communities where people go on and they, you know, pledge to support each other through suicide, which is obviously incredibly fucking dark. But it's a breeding ground for murderers to go in and find victims who have a great deal of apathy towards life and very, very easy prey. So there's two notorious serial killers who have found their victims in that way in Japan. The first is Hiroshi Mao, and he lured his victims, three different victims, in 2005. So he became known as the suicide website murderer.
That's he not suffered, catchy. They definitely could have come up with something better.
But he suffered from a paraphilic psychosexual disorder, which basically meant that he couldn't get off unless he was strangling someone. So he went onto these websites.
That sounds convenient, though. Yeah.
I mean, is it? I don't
well, it's but just like a, his whole I have defense, this condition.
Yeah, the whole defense was that like he couldn't get off and he found people that wanted to die. Where is okay. the harm? Which obviously there's a lot of harm because as we well know, you know,
people
suicidal
died.
Inclinations don't always last and are treatable and people can be helped. But he went on to this one website. He found three people in 2005. One was a 14-year-old boy, 25-year-old woman, and a 21-year-old man, all of whom were members of the same online suicide club. He lured his victims by suggesting they meet and end their lives together via a charcoal burner in a sealed car. But after a brief conversation, he would strangle them, jack off.
Did they know that he was going to jack off?
No.
I don't think they knew right. that he was going to strangle them either.
No. Sorry. Because I think that's
because they were both planning to do, like he was luring them saying, we'll do it together. They were not signing up for this. Well, like not signing up for what he had in mind.
So those killings occurred really early in 2005. He was imprisoned. He was convicted in August of the same year and he was sentenced to death and he was executed 2 years later, so around 2007. But then in 2007, it happened again with the Zama suicide pact slayings. So this was a multiple homicide occurring in Zama, Japan, in November 2017, in which nine people, mostly young women and three, including three high school girls, were killed by a 27-year-old murderer called Takahiro Shirashashi.
What?
Oh my god.
So exact same thing. He put an advertisement
that
out.
That pronunciation is disgusting, Cassie.
Sorry. Shirashashi. There's a lot of S's and H's in this name and I's. It's very confusing.
You're doing great.
So he put out an advertisement on these sites asking people to come to his house so that he could watch them commit suicide. And he offered to assist and step in if they needed the help. Fucking awful. But he, again, same thing. When they arrived at his house, he would choke them to death.
Jesus.
So that, all in all, is just another notch in my campaign to turn off the internet. I think it's a dangerous,
I think you make a compelling case with that one.
That's pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's disturbed me somewhat. Because it's conflicting in that they sound to be convinced that they're ready to go. They're arriving to a stranger's home with this situation. I mean, they're taking some big risks.
And it is like, but I think that the worrisome thing is congregating with people who are in the same, I suppose, psychiatric state that you are in. Mm. And that's being facilitated by these like suicide clubs.
Anyway, that was absolutely marvelous. Also pretty depressing.
It's very depressing.
Thank you very much. So no, that rounds us out. But go on, Sophs.
No, not at all.
I'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons. We just like to say it is extremely nice. It's just very a supportive and nice feeling to think that people are, you know, genuinely offering up a few bob to keep us ticking over. And we just really appreciate it.
And also just having a lot of crack on the Thursday Zooms. I'm really looking forward to this Thursday. I've got an excellent...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's
I'm
a dive. It's a deep dive.
You've got a dive.
Yeah, do you remember I told you what it is?
I can't remember. Did you tell me on a text message?
People or taking a dive.
Oh, yeah. I'm very excited about yours.
It's going to be good.
Oh, lads. They're ripping the house apart. It's all grand. It's all grand. So listen, we'll see you next week for our usual weekly offering. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming.
Stay creepy. Adios.
Bye.